Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Lots to get through as usual, and as usual, we'll start with what to see in the night sky.
Now, I will start with the Perseid meteor shower last week. I went out, when was the 12th? Was it last Tuesday? Anyway, moon was bright, this was the thing. And I went out purposely just to see how many I could see. And I went from midnight until 1 a.m. and saw two. Yeah, the moon was extremely bright, and the angle that I suppose they were coming in from was just a bit low. If I had to stay in it a little bit longer, maybe I would have got to see a few more as they raised into the height of the evening skies, I suppose, but two. But I did go out on the 15th again, which is pretty clear, and I got to see a hell of a lot more, probably 10 an hour. And that was over the period of maximum, I suppose, but they are still fantastic.
Past it then, yeah, but because the moon, less moonlight, you saw more of them. Good.
You did.
I didn't manage to catch any this year between one thing and another.
They're very, very nice to see. Some of them, because some of them come in very, very large. And the smaller ones, unfortunately, eluded us this year. Now, if you were in darker skies, I suppose, you might have got to see a few more. But in general, the moon was extremely bright that particular night on the 12th. Into the 13th, so didn't get to see too many, but we did get to see some, or should I say. I got to see some, because the rest of our household is not usually up at that hour of the evening. International Space Station, September the 10th till September the 28th. That's when it's back in our evening skies. And we'll get to see a couple of morning passes. Again, I don't have time, but it's just Googleable. I think is the word.
Check out Heavens Above. Well, there's many sites. There's, if you go onto the NASA site, and also heavensabove.com.
Yep, indeed. So you've got to wait for another little while before that happens. Mercury. Now, this is interesting. It's low in the dawn. At the moment, it nearly triples its brightness this week from magnitude plus 0.5, which is quite dim, which was just on Saturday morning. This is Tuesday. So today, the 16th. No, it's not the 16th, it's the 19th. Doesn't time fly when you're having fun? Yep, minus 0.6 a week later on this Saturday coming the 23rd. It's minus 0.6, so look for it low in the east, northeast, and early twilight. Jupiter and Venus point to it all week. Again, it's not a planet that I have purposely gone to see. Venus and Jupiter, they're both in Gemini, shine in the east just before and during dawn. They're the two bright planets, currently magnitude minus 3.9. Now, Venus is dimmed just a shade, and minus 2 for Jupiter. So a little bit less bright, I suppose, but they will come back in eventually. And they went through their conjunction on the 12th, which was the peak of the Perseid meteor shower. They were only one single degree apart. So they would have been easy to spot. So they're creeping apart again now. Mars, a weak magnitude 1.6. It still glimmers very low in the west during the evening twilight. And, of course, binoculars will help. And Mars sets at twilight's end. Saturn, plus 0.7. It's quite dim as well. It's in Pisces just at the moment. It rises due east around the end of twilight. And it's lower right of the great square of Pegasus, so if you know where that is, it's not too far away. And pretty close to Saturn is about 1 degree away, if you want to get out your telescope. 7.8 is Neptune. And they describe this as a telescopic star, so you need something powerful to get to see Neptune, but you will get to see Saturn just up to the upper right of, when I say upper right, it's still pretty close, but it's up towards the top. And the last of all, Uranus, magnitude plus 5.7. It's in Taurus at the moment, near the Pleiades cluster. And it rises around 11 p.m. and is high in the east before the beginning of dawn. And if you're looking through this through a telescope, it's a tiny but definitely a non-stellar dot, which is 3.6 arc seconds wide, which is not really that wide at all. So that's what to see. So,
but you will see it as a disk if you if you're in focus. You will notice it is a disk and therefore a planet and not. The best you can get out of a point from a star, of course, is a point of light.
I must put it on my mission list to see if I can spot Mercury now that it's got a little bit brighter.
Well, tonight's a good time because actually today is at its greatest elongation, 18.5 degrees west of the sun. And just another point of if you're up early tomorrow morning, you did mention Jupiter. It's 5.25 degrees to the right of the moon, so that's half of a fist width at arm's length to the right of the moon. That brightish light is Jupiter. And on Thursday morning, Mercury is actually at dichotomy and is 7.5 degrees to the lower left of the moon. So if you're out Thursday morning, again, nearly a fist width apart at full arm stretch is to the lower left of the moon. That is indeed Mercury. And speaking of the moon, at the moment we have a 13% waning crescent. It is not currently above our horizon here in Dublin because it did set about 5 to 10 minutes ago, but it will rise again in the early hours of tomorrow morning, just before 2 a.m. tomorrow morning, and it will be due south at its highest when it crosses the meridian. That's just after 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. And when it sets tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock, it will be down to a 7% waning crescent, as opposed to, as I said, currently a 13% waning crescent, which means, of course, we're heading towards the new moon, which will be on Saturday the 23rd. And the sun, that rises tomorrow in Dublin at 6:14 a.m., 13 minutes later than a week ago, local noon. That's when the sun is due south and at its highest, crosses the meridian. That's at 1:28 p.m. And the sun will set at 8:41 p.m. tomorrow evening. That's 15 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then we'll have various shades of twilight until astronomical night begins at 11:07 p.m. tomorrow evening. So tomorrow, 3 minutes and 56 seconds less daylight than today, when there will be 14 hours and 28 minutes between sunrise and sunset, which is a whole 27 minutes less daylight than a week ago.
And is noticeable.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, closing
in fast.
As you would say, a grand de-stretch.
Contraction.
Contraction or something, yeah. Last week you mentioned that the results were going to come through for the photography, the astrophotography.
Yes, a few weeks ago. Yes, we did mention it. Yes.
Yeah, that's the DIIS Reach for the Stars astrophotography competition. And seemingly, some winners have been announced.
Indeed. Marty McCormick, for example, who we have had on this program at least once. He apparently for the second year in a row now. And he's based in Glasnevin. I mean, he was the winner of the deep sky category with a photograph called Out of the World. It was a picture of the Rosetta Nebula, which is a nebula which is just over 5,000 light years away. And another well-known astrophotographer, Anthony Lynch, who I don't think we've had here, but I have had been to one or two of his lectures. He's based in Dublin 7, and his photograph, Comet Catcher, is kind of very clever, a picture of himself. This is taken with a smartphone. That was the category, actually. It is a picture of him with his hand up reaching towards the comet at the time. Which one was it? Oh, 12P Pons Brooks, when it was low on the horizon. Rather clever a photograph, indeed. Actually, he took home two awards this year, and I'm not sure what the other one was. Oh, yes. He was also the winner of the People's Choice Prize with his image Symmetry. Oh, yes, that was the sweeping panorama of the Milky Way on top of the train tracks from Loughborough Park, County Offaly. We were just having a look at that earlier. It seemed to be taken with a fisheye lens. And the train tracks, which seem to curve towards the camera, and above it, then there's symmetrically opposite that in the sky, there's a lovely picture of, you can see the Milky Way. So well done
all,
and to Dias, of course, for organising it. And we look forward to next year's competition. And
thank you to Eamon Mackey for sending in the email to us here in the radio station. And thanks for just informing us of what's going on, and keep it up. That's what we say. So just to show you exactly what goes on with these, there were over 170 entries from photographers across Ireland with photos taken between the end of April and June the 2nd, 2025. And, yep, it's a hard job for those judges, I would imagine. I must say, I am a great fan of deep space photography. Like the Orion's Belt, another one under Orion's Belt, which is
M42.
That's fantastic to watch through binoculars, even that particular one. And if you can take a photograph of it as well, the colours would be enhanced to give you more viewing. So indeed, again, thanks to Eamon Mackey for sending us in that email on the results.
Thank you, Dee. Just to remind you, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. The text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. You can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast.
Now, Russia to launch 75 mice, 1,000 fruit flies on August the 20th, which is not too far away. It's Tomorrow. provided that everything goes A-OK and they're not delayed by weather or anything like that. It's the Bion M number 2 satellite, and its living, breathing payloads will circle Earth for 1 month. So Russia at the moment is preparing to loft a miniature mouse hotel into space, which is quite interesting, and they're going to study the effects of gravity and microgravity and everything as well. That isn't that, and to radiation, I suppose, as well with that. So all of the 75 mice, and again, I photographed what they're going up in as well, so they're going to be exposed to 30 days of radiation before a parachute-aided return to Russia. There are more than 1,000 fruit flies, there's cell cultures, there's microorganisms, and plant seeds as well going up.
That's some job having to count the fruit flies, isn't it? Stay easy. Yeah. Don't move. I'm trying to catch.
Lads, there's one missing. imagine a floating mouse trap up there, just in case one of them escapes. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, the breaststroke or something through the. Imagine losing a mouse up there. Where would they hide? I don't know. So we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens to that. So they have a whole month up in space in the mouse and fly hotel.
Thank you, John, for that. Now, meanwhile, over in the USA, I see Mr. The US President, Donald Trump, he signed an executive order last week, which in the aim of which is to ease regulations for the private space industry. This will benefit his good friend, or he was his good friend. Not sure how friendly he is now with Elon Musk, but it's certainly good news for him. and it will help him with Mr. Musk's Starship series of space launches. He has had a series of setbacks, actually. The last one was that big explosion in June. SpaceX, they have various sized rockets. They've blasted off more than 130 times last year. I think most of them are for the SpaceLink little satellites. And this change will definitely benefit Mr. Musk, who of course has been campaigning for deregulation of the space industry. And the executive order, its aim is to, quote, to eliminate or expedite the Department of Transportation's environmental reviews for launches. So this is not going down to, he just wants to ease or get rid of these restrictions when it comes to the environment, but she was never known as a lover of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Drill, baby, drill and all that. Now, SpaceX has repeatedly been criticized over the environmental impact of the sites where Starship, the largest and most powerful rocket in history, blasts off, and a U.S. based nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity said that Trump's new executive order paves the way for the massive destruction of protected plants and animals, and that the reckless order puts people and wildlife at risk for private companies launching giant rockets that often explode and wreck devastation on surrounding areas. And we've had covered that in the past, and there have been people, I think there was Mexico thinking of suing. I know there was a lot of fiery debris landed on Caribbean islands as well, and sure, he has more launches planned. Oh, there, the rocket's 10th test flight is set to launch as soon as August 24th, which is only 5 days away from Texas. And as I mentioned earlier, during two test flights earlier in the year, the rocket's upper stage, which is the spacecraft intended to carry crew and cargo, that went into, just basically exploded not long after launch. And the Starship managed to make it to the space, did manage to make it to space during its last test flight in May. But then, however, it then blew up when a fuel leak caused it to lose control. So it hasn't been going too well. So, well, you know, it's 123 meters tall, just taller than a tad taller than the Spire in Dublin.
Yeah.
Of course, it's much wider and broader.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So, but he still is planning on sending an unmanned, uncrewed, his first uncrewed mission to Mars next year, 2026.
Yeah.
Well, he'll have to have a few successes before then, because, as I mentioned, the last few have not gone too well.
Anyway, you're listening to The Astronomy Show right here, 103.2 Dublin City FM. And indeed, thank you for tuning our way. Text line is open as always, 087-179-1032. And don't forget to look at the website as well, the brand new Dublin City FM website with two very handsome chappies on it on the Tuesday. from 7 until 8. Now, a couple of weeks ago, on August the 6th, astronaut Barry Wilmore, otherwise known as Butch, he announced his retirement after 25 years with NASA, and he served also as a US Navy test pilot before becoming an astronaut. Wilmore, he's 62, and astronaut Suni Williams, if you remember, gained a lot of media attention with their 10-day Boeing Starliner test flight turning into a 9-month stay instead of a sort of around an 8 or 9 day stay. So, from his earliest days, he says he was captivated by the marvels of creation, looking upward with insatiable curiosity. So, the very best of luck to him, whatever he does that as well. But he accumulated a few flights, accumulating 464 days in space. So that's, as I say, he's just probably got to the thing where he won't be going back up. So he says, yep, I've had enough. I've had a great time. And his lasting legacy and fortitude will continue to impact and inspire the Johnson workforce, future explorers and the nation for generations. So the very best of luck to him as well. Just also looking, Ben, during August, you get to see a trio of spectacular star clusters brighten the summer sky, which will be something to look forward to. Now, unfortunately, a couple of them are down low in the east horizon. One is beside a star called Aldebaran, which is the Hyades cluster. The other one, of course, we know very well is the Seven Sisters, which is an open star cluster, the M45, as we know it, and the Seven Sisters. And the other one is Hercules, which is M13. So if you take just a note of those, just Google them as well. So what happens, especially with the Pleiades, and that's a favourite one of mine because it's a mind-boggler when you look through a pair of binoculars or telescope. First of all, with the naked eye, you see the Seven Sisters shaped like a mini version of the plough, I suppose. And if you look through binoculars, it suddenly bursts into life. And it's a fantastic one to even think about looking at. And then there's the other one as well, that's a nebula, which is the Orion Nebula, which is, I can't remember the M number on that one,
42, I believe.
Yeah. That's another one just under the belt of the, you know, the three dots that go across the sky. And that's another one fantastic to see through a telescope or binoculars. And if you take a photograph of it, you get to see the blinding colours. They're completely different than what we would see with the naked eye, so the colours come and are more vivid. So good pair of binoculars, I suppose. 10x50s, another good one as well, I suppose. A little bit stronger, 12x56s. And that's one I'm not that familiar with, because I have 10x50s. You have 7x something.
Yeah. I have 15x7.
There you go. And the other was a 7 in it somewhere. Yeah. And a little bit hard to hold, just to give you that eye.
They are big, and that's why I keep a little pair of 10x25s or 10x40s on the seat of the car in case I come across some.
Yeah, it's they're quite hard. The big ones are quite hard on the eye. So you really need.
They're just at a bit at the limit of seeing something, but you can see the. I can just about make out the rings of Saturn. Mm-hmm. Looking at Saturn through them, and of course if you just put them on a tripod, then
you're away. You are definitely away. And I have tripods, monopods, and all sorts of pods. And again, you have 15x70. It's like looking through a pair of telescopes.
I have the standard 10x50s as well.
Yeah.
But they're a bit battered, and they've seen better days, my 10x50s. Yeah,
so there you go. During August, the Hyades, the Pleiades, and the Hercules, and the Orion Nebula as well. That's probably the easiest one to see, but well, maybe not. Pleiades is, although it's quite dim, the whole thing, you have to really wait till it gets up high in the sky as well. So that's something I will be pointing my binoculars or telescope at as well during August.
Thank you, John. Now, very briefly, you know, we have collision avoidance systems in cars these days. So next stage, you put them on satellites, because it's getting very crowded up there. Apparently there are more than 11,000 active satellites at the moment. And of course there's lots more on the way. And it's estimated there are approximately 1.2 million pieces of debris fragments larger than 1 centimeter. And of course that means with a million pieces of junk floating around, we call it space junk, there's the risks of collisions are getting greater by the day. So have you heard of the Collision Risk Estimation and Automated Mitigation Project, otherwise known as CREAM?
CREAM, yeah.
Collision Risk Estimation and Automated Mitigation. It's this is a project that ESA are very much involved in. That's the European Space Agency. It was actually launched in 2020 and has entered a key stage involving ground systems tests, in-orbit demonstration planning, and the whole idea is to automate much of the manual work in collision avoidance, from assessing conjunctions to planning maneuvers, supporting decision-making, and coordinating with other operators. So I suppose it makes sense. If you can have collision avoidance system in cars, of course, you also need the little boosters and rockets and fuel on the satellites to get out of each other's way and get out of the way of other bits of debris that's flying loose. So, that's it, yeah. Good idea. I know it's one of your favourite subjects, space junk.
It is. It's remarkable, because there was, I suppose, about 10,000 objects when we started, going back 20-odd years ago, and about 4 centimetres, like a tennis ball, that sort of area. And then you've the flexi-paint, you've got booster rockets, you've got car-sized this and bus-sized that, and all sorts of things up there. So it is going to be a problem, and it certainly is with the rate that rockets are being launched and stuff has been pushed into space. Like, just open the door, let them out. There you go.
And of course, if two satellites crash into one another, they can, instead of two pieces, they can go into thousands or even millions of pieces. And just the place is getting overcrowded out there. So up there, and of course, there are other methods being developed to actually collect junk other probes go up and attach themselves onto other satellites or give them a push back towards Earth's atmosphere so they can burn up much quicker. Some of them will take days, some of them will take years. There's rocket parts up there since the 60s and long looming orbits around the Earth, which someday may come down. I think this is actually a part of one of the Apollo Stage 2 boosters there. Up there, which is in the long orbit, I think it's around the sun. It's estimated it'll be there for millions of years. Mm-hmm. Anyway, 100,000 years. But, that particular piece doesn't seem to be of danger to anyone or anything, as far as I can make out.
Yep. Now, the James Webb Telescope, that's one of the telescopes that you and I saw being launched a number of years ago. And its latest uncoveration, I'm full of these big words tonight, 300 mysteriously luminous objects. Are they galaxies or something else? This is what they're trying to figure out at the moment. They're looking so far back into space using the deep field images from the NASA's James Webb Space Telescope, the JWST for short, and they reckon the unexpectedly energetic objects have been discovered throughout the distance and the distance of the universe, possibly hinting that the cosmos was far more active during its infancy than astronomers once believed. So that's fairly new news out from the JWST, and we'll follow that, see what they come up with as to whether they are galaxies or anything else that might be just floating out there. And there was a thing called the Devil Comet, Ben, and this contains the strongest evidence yet that comets delivered water to Earth. So the Devil Comet's water is strikingly similar to water on Earth, they reckon. And how they've discovered this, I don't know. The finding supports the idea that water was brought to our planet through comet impacts, which would make a lot of sense. Yeah, rather than asteroids, and because there's a lot of water here on our planet.
I thought I know that's, I think, the most common theory, all right, that it came from comets after the initial Earth began to cool. But lately gaining traction is also the theory of that a lot of the water was brought from by meteors and meteorites, but now you're indicating that it's going, going back the other way.
It is. That's what they're saying here. There's a lot of comets with clean water, something like that as well. And the researchers made this particular discovery while observing a comet called 12P Pons-Brooks, also dubbed as the Devil Comet. That's what that one is called. The large millimeter submillimeter array, the ALMA, and the NASA Infrared Telescope Facility. And of course, Comet 12P Pons-Brooks, just remember that, is a Halley type comet, or a Halley type comet, a class of comets that has an orbital period between 20 and 200 years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So this is the newest, well, I suppose the newest one. This comet 12P, PB, that's what we call it for short.
Thank you, John, for that, and also for driving the sound desk this evening. Don't forget, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. But that's all from us here in the studio here in Smithfield, Dublin. And I'd just like to say, yes, have a very pleasant evening. Join us next week. It's music all the way now until 2 a.m. here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Don't forget, you can also catch us live on dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Yes, up next, Dublin's Greatest Hits, and from 10 p.m. to midnight, Nigel Wood with his World Music Mix has his ear to the globe, and from midnight until 2 a.m., Dave Barry with his mix of jazz, blues and soul in a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.